Very easy to think about those who are serving us in the military as functionaries, as people, faceless? Soldiers, Marines, out there on the battlefield. But it's not true. We're talking about real men and women who are serving us in the military. We're going to be talking about the military chaplaincy and the ministry of a missionary to the military. I like the way that our guest here in the first hour puts that, Dr. Dan Gard, a missionary to the military. We'll be talking about the military chaplaincy for just about the next 25 minutes of Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We are back live this Monday, July the 30th, after some extensive travel and some remote broadcast. In the second half hour of the program, running into the second hour, the Issues, Etc. listener comment line. We've got several lined up comments from California, Texas, Detroit, Tennessee, and elsewhere, even one perhaps of heavenly origin that we'll play for you there during the listener comment line segment of the program. Starting at about 4:15, we're going to be talking with you and doing a little audio open lines, a PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly feature on religion and The Simpsons. Of course, The Simpsons movie came out this weekend. Fox News segment on virtual child porn. Some say it actually ought to be and is legal. And a Fox News report on an attempted exorcism by a grandfather of his 3-year-old grandchild. Kid nearly died. That'll be during audio open lines. Then in the second, a third hour of the program, Pastor Paul Beasel will join us to talk about private confession and absolution. He's making a presentation at the Higher Things Youth Conference called PC&A. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. Dr. Dan Gard is our guest for the first half hour. He's professor of Old Testament at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne. He's dean of the Military Chaplaincy Candidate Program, and he's author of an article in the latest issue of For the Life of the World magazine titled Kneeling in the Mud, The Ministry of a Missionary to the Military. Dr. Gard, welcome back.
Well, it is great to be back. It has been a while.
Tell us this story about one Easter morning with the Seabees in North Carolina.
Oh, sure. That was probably 1998, I believe, was the spring. And it was one of those strokes of brilliance on the part of the Navy where they decided to assign a Midwestern Seabee battalion made up of reservists to go for training over Holy Week and Easter. Well, I happened to be the chaplain of that battalion, and I raised the point as soon as I could to the commanding officer that that was probably not the best time to pull a lot of Lutherans and Roman Catholics out of their homes and parishes and send them off to North Carolina. And he agreed, but the Navy had made its decision, so we went. And it happened to be one of those very damp springs in North Carolina. We had approximately 400 Seabees out in the field, all reservists, all from states like Indiana, Illinois, Wisconsin, Ohio, and Michigan. And of those 400 Seabees, we managed to provide or have a Easter sunrise service and had nearly 300 of them at the service, which is really quite amazing. What the training was about was Seabees, as some of your listeners may not know, are the Navy's construction people, and they take pride in being the world's finest construction force. They can build anything anywhere. These guys are absolutely amazing, but they're not only construction people. They're also warriors, and so they have to defend themselves if they're in a place where people might be shooting at them. And so this training involved both the building of, in this case, a bridge and some other construction projects, and at the same time fending off an aggressor force that was made up of United States Marines from nearby Camp Lejeune in North Carolina. Well, the war was very intense, as they called it. And on Easter morning, I got them to call off the war for about 3 hours, which was you can't do in a real-life situation, but we could do it in training, and they agreed to do that. And even some of the Marines that were our aggressors came to the service, which is very interesting to see the Marine aggressors with the Navy Seabees worshiping together, but it was only training. After the general Protestant sunrise service, it's kind of an open Christian service, which was very interesting in itself because I had spent a lot of time with this battalion, and I had a couple very interesting visitors. One was a Muslim young man who was one of the best CBs we had. The guy was very, very gifted in many ways, but he was a devout Muslim. And he came to me, he said, "Hey, chaplain, I want to go to your Easter sunrise service." And I said, "Hey, that's great. I'd love to have you, but you got to know I'm a Christian, and the service is going to be a Christian service. We very much want you to be there." And he said, "Oh, I'll be there." Another man who I shared a tent with actually was a Mormon, and he said the same thing. He said, "Hey, chaps, I want to go to your service." I said, "Same thing." I said, "That's great. I said, I'd love to have you there, but I do want you to know that it is a, it's Christian service, so don't be surprised. I'm not going to change anything for anybody," and he agreed to that. He came, and it was particularly a meaningful service to me because it was a very cold, wet morning, that Easter morning in North Carolina. It had been raining constantly for days, and there was simply mud everywhere. I had saved one set of camouflage utility uniforms for Easter morning because I figured I would be at least clean on Easter morning. By the time I got from my tent to where the services were, I was covered with mud anyway, so it didn't really matter. After the sunrise service, the Lutherans remained, and we gathered around a makeshift altar. And what we did was take a table in a mess tent where the floor had been flooded by the waters and set upon it actually an old World War II vintage altar set. My battalion still had it from World War II, and it is absolutely gorgeous. You don't see these things in the modern military, with a silver crucifix and candles and silver communion ware. After the communion service, after all the Lutheran CBs had come up without my instruction, but one by one, it just happened this way. They would come, they would kneel before the altar individually, and I would commune each of them. One chief petty officer, very crusty old guy. You've got to understand two things. One is CBs are some of God's most unique creations. They are very different kinds of people. And chief petty officers in the Navy are also very unique parts of God's creation. And when you have both of those embodied in one person, that is a chief petty officer who's a CB, you have something very unique. And after the communion service, he came up to me and he looked at me and he said, "Pastor, you'll never understand the Eucharist until you kneel in the mud." And as he said that, I thought, you have just said something more profound than I've heard probably up to this point in my life. That was Easter in North Carolina, 1998.
So what do you think the chief petty officer meant, having received the Lord's body and blood for the forgiveness of sins, on his knees, in a tent, floor flooded, muddy floor? What do you think he meant?
I think he meant exactly what he said. It was an amazing thing. The man was thinking in a way that just astounded me, because I had never considered it this way. But what he saw was himself, his pastor for the day, that was me, his brothers in Christ, all literally covered with mud, filthy. Our families would not have wanted anything to do with us. And yet, right into the midst of this thing, this muddy mess where we were preparing for one of the most awful things a human being can do, and that's to go to war. As we prepared for that, yet right in the midst of all that mess came Christ in his body and blood. He doesn't require a cathedral. He goes to where his people are. And it was a profound insight on the part of that chief that he knew that no matter where he found himself, even covered with mud and kneeling with mud, there came his Savior to reach to him right where he was.
Why is it important that we think about the military chaplain as a missionary to the military?
You know, it's interesting. Our Lutheran Church Missouri Synod actually issues the divine call to active duty chaplains through the Board for Mission Services. The military can't call one of our pastors. They can commission the pastor, but the divine call needs to come through the church and through the normal processes of the church. And the Senate has recognized that, in fact, our chaplains serve in that capacity as missionaries. They bring the gospel into a very different kind of mission field, perhaps, than other mission fields, but they are missionaries. They represent the church. They represent Christ with his word and sacraments right in the midst of a mission field. And thus we call them missionaries, and they're called as missionaries. I'm a reserve chaplain. My call happens to be to Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. But I am endorsed also by the Synod to serve as a reserve chaplain, and still considered by the Synod during my time of active duty or training to be a missionary of the Synod. Missionaries go to places where, in many cases, the gospel has never been proclaimed, or they go to strengthen new and growing churches. Chaplains who are sent as missionaries to the military go into a very secular institution. You've got to remember what the military is for. There's lots of different things that have been done with the military, I think, in the last 20 or 30 years. In some cases, almost social experimentation that takes place. And the military is often the debate or the center of debate of politicians and others. But the bottom line reason for the military's existence is to defend the United States. That's why we have a military. That's why young men and women put on the uniform and serve their country. They can be deployed at any time when this elected civilian government decides that we need to use military force. That's a decision that's not reached by the military. It's reached by those who are elected by the American people, the president and the Congress, to make those decisions. And the military's job then is to obey the orders of those elected civilian authorities and to carry out the war making of the United States on behalf of the American people. And it's to that we send these chaplains. So they go into an institution which its very purpose is the polar opposite of what the church is about. The church doesn't go to war with rifles and aircraft and carriers and tanks. We have a different kind of war that we're fighting. But we send our pastors to be with the young men, the young women who wear the uniform of our country in order that the gospel of Jesus Christ might be proclaimed to them.
Is it a fundamental incompatibility? I mean, you mentioned the kind of opposite means and ends of the church and the civil, or I should say the kind of the secular institution, the military. Is it a fundamental incompatibility that the Christians can't get their hands dirty doing such things, or chaplains are going to be running into this all the time when they're out in the field with the military?
No, I don't think it's a fundamental problem at all. The reason is because God has established two kingdoms in this world. One is the kingdom of the right, the other kingdom of the left. Now, that's kind of unique Lutheran theology, I think. I don't know of any other faith tradition in the Christian church that says the same thing the way that Lutheranism has understood it. But both are established by God. The kingdom of the right, the church, there is his gospel, there is the means of grace. And that is established by God. But God has also, for example, in Romans 13, established the civil authority as also his servant to protect and to do the things that are necessary to keep the world in order so that the church can flourish. The kingdom of the left is what is represented by the military, that this is the servant of God that bears the sword in the name of God. And they are thus also fulfilling a proper right vocation. Luther dealt with that quite extensively, whether a Christian can be a soldier, and his answer was yes, that's part of God's established order. And as a chaplain, you have this very unique position because you are identified with what can be called two total institutions. What I mean by total institution is something outside of you that says to you that there's a certain way you're going to live. There's even a telling of the member of the institution where he or she is going to live, what they're going to wear, what they're going to do on a particular day, how they have to present themselves. The church is very much a total institution, especially for her pastors. The church is the one who the Holy Spirit uses to place a pastor in a particular place of service. Wherever a pastor is called, it's God working through his people in that place that has called that pastor to serve in that particular place. And that's where his call is, so that's where he stays and he works and he serves. There are expectations on the part of the pastor, how you dress in that particular context, certainly how you act, what you do, what your schedule is. So the pastor has always the church's total institution. But as a member of the military, he also has the military as total institution, because the military also places those same kinds of demands upon you. They issue you orders. You go where they tell you. You wear what they tell you. You do what they tell you. They set the schedule. And so for the pastor, there's this incredible tension that exists between being a servant of the church and also being a commissioned officer in the military. And it can be a very uncomfortable tension at times. But it is a tension that I think is very productive, because it allows us as Christians and as missionaries of the Synod to be a part of an institution that's filled with just incredibly wonderful young people, many of whom have not heard the gospel, many of whom have yet to come to the water of baptism. And what a great place it is to have our pastors. About a year ago, or excuse me, 2 years ago, we had a Marine battalion of reserve Marines, almost all of them from Ohio. I got to tell you this story because I'm very proud of this chaplain. I happen to have recruited him to the Navy. This battalion of Marines lost some 49 men during their deployment to Iraq. In 1 2-day period in August 2 years ago, they lost 21 Marines in 2 days. The chaplain, the pastor that was on the ground in Iraq with those Marines, was a Lutheran Church Missouri Synod pastor by the name of Eric Malmstrom, a reserve chaplain who serves as the headmaster at Zion Lutheran School in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and also as a Navy reserve chaplain. This young man was there. He was the guy who held the hands of those Marines, spoke to them the words of the gospel, lifted them beyond the horror and tragedy of losing their friends and comrades, and presented Christ to them. I happen to be back here in the States working with the families in Ohio while my brother, pastor, was on the ground in Iraq with those young Marines. Talk about being a missionary. What that young man did to this very day just absolutely astounds me, and I am so grateful to God that he was a part of a system that allowed him to be there with the purity of the gospel and those the incredible blessing of the sacraments that Christ has given to his church.
I just heard over the weekend an announcement. A friend of mine and a pastor serving a local congregation is, oddly enough, a headmaster of a school, too, called up to go to Kuwait for a year's deployment.
And I know him. He called me yesterday.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. I would like you to speak to the congregation and to the family, if you would, about how they also are serving seamen, airmen, soldiers, by letting their pastor, their headmaster, their father, their husband go for that year, if you would, for about a minute and a half, please.
Oh, I would be glad to. My wife is probably the one who could answer that question the best. I'm on my way out also. I've just been notified of another year's mobilization. I'm being recalled to active duty to serve at the Marine Corps. And I leave in about 2 weeks for that, and I'll be gone for a year. So my family's dealing with this as well. But to the families, the wives of and children of our chaplains, to the parishes of the reserve chaplains that lose your pastor for a period of time, know this: your husband, your pastor, your father is going to take Jesus Christ out into a place where his message is needed. I remember years ago when I was a child, my father deployed for a year. He was an Air Force chaplain. And I still have a letter that he sent to me. I must have been 4 or 5 years old. And in that letter, he reminded me that despite how sad I was that he was gone and how much I missed him, that there were airmen and soldiers, sailors and Marines that needed to hear about Jesus, and that it was his job to go to the place he was at and to be there to talk about Jesus, to let these sailors and Marines know, and airmen know, of the love of God. That stuck with me my entire life, and I hope and pray that the wives and children and parishes of our reserve chaplains will know just how important the work is of that pastor, that missionary to the military, in reaching out to those precious souls for whom Christ has already died and risen, and to announce to them that great hope that belongs to all the world, that because Jesus lives, they too shall live.
Dr. Gard, Issues, Etc., as you know, is underwritten in part by Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, where you serve, and Concordia Seminary, St. Louis as well. Why should a man consider studying for the office of the ministry? 30 seconds.
Because it's the great... I tell people there are three things, actually two things, I've never regretted in my life. One is marrying the woman I married, and the other is becoming a pastor. To become a pastor is to take your life and to use it in the only thing that finally really matters for eternity, and that is the proclamation of Christ, that God's Son has redeemed this world, and into human hands, God has placed that incredible message. He allows people, men, weak ones, like me, to be able to take the eternal gospel and to proclaim it to whoever will listen. It is an amazingly fulfilling, not easy, but amazingly fulfilling life, one that brings nothing but incredible joy, despite all the struggles and even the heartache that goes along with it at times, to know that when it's all said and done, that your life has been spent in service to the one around whose throne you'll spend eternity in praise and worship.
For more information on Concordia Seminary St. Louis and Concordia Theological Seminary Fort Wayne, look for their logos at our homepage, issuesetc.org. Dr. Dan Gard is professor of Old Testament at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, dean of the Military Chaplaincy Candidate Program, and author of an article in the latest issue of For the Life of the World magazine titled Kneeling in the Mud, The Ministry of a Missionary to the Military. You can read this article on the web at lifeoftheworld.com, all one word, lifeoftheworld.com. Dr. Gard, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you. It's my privilege, and God be with you.
I like the way that is put, missionary to the military. Suddenly it puts it all into perspective, what the chaplain is there for. He's there for the same reason your pastor's there, because your pastor's a missionary to you, to bring you Jesus Christ for the forgiveness of sins, that message of Christ and Him crucified for you. When we come back from this break, we're going to be listening to some of our listener comments from our Issues, Etc. listener comment line. Listeners from California and Texas and Tennessee and Michigan. Not all positive, some of them negative, some of them reacting to last night's program on the nationally syndicated edition of Issues, Etc., when we talked with Dr. Richard Stuckwish about the Harry Potter series, how it came out, and some of the Christological symbolism in the Harry Potter series, and reacting to other things as well. We even get one that may be of a divine origin. We don't know for sure. It's hard to tell. That's the listener comment line on the other side of this break. Tomorrow on the program, is God a feminist? Pastor Scott Porath will be our guest to talk about that tomorrow on the program. We'll be right back.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Why should Christian parents teach their children the biblical account of creation? The story of creation is part of the story of salvation. Our Issues, Etc. book of the month for July is called The Real Story of Creation by Dr. Paul Meyer. This children's book is $16.99 plus shipping and handling. For more information, go to our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Ask for The Real Story of Creation.
Authentic Christianity and the Institutional Church. Time for a change? This is the theme of the 18th Annual Theological Symposium at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. The symposium is open for both lay people and professional church workers. How can the church survive a post-denominational era? You'll find answers at the annual symposium September 18th and 19th on the campus of Concordia Seminary, St. Louis. For more information, call 314-505-7123 or visit www.csl.edu.
Are pro-lifers outside of the political mainstream?
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
With a presidential election on the horizon, one can expect to hear claims that the pro-life position is outside of the political mainstream. But don't be fooled by such rhetoric. Statistics show that over the past 10 years, a larger percentage of young Americans support outlawing or restricting abortion. The figure is now up to 65%. The mainstream position amongst Americans, especially young Americans, is increasingly pro-life. Regrettably, it is the leading contenders for the presidency who appear to be out of step on this matter.
Are you pro-life? Then visit our website at sba-list.org and discover how you can make a difference. I'm Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. Thanks for taking a stand.
This presentation of the Meyer Minute on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Thrivent Financial, where values thrive, and online at thrivent.com.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. Galatians says, "The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control." What a sweet list. Does it describe you? No doubt the Spirit of God is putting out love, joy, peace, and the like. But it doesn't always get through to us. She's best known to us as Tammy Faye Baker. She died after a long battle with cancer. Tammy Faye and husband Jim Baker led the PTL Ministries with 500,000 followers, a business empire, and in the end, disgrace. She used her struggle against cancer to tell people not to be afraid. "Don't let fear rule your life," she said. "Live one day at a time and never be afraid." But how do we get there? Get to a point where we are not afraid of cancer or anything else. Love, joy, and peace do not have an easy way into our hearts. Instead of accepting a blanket, "Don't be afraid," why not admit you are afraid, and then go to the one who can calm you? You will best know the fruits of the Spirit by acknowledging their unpleasant counterparts in your life. Anger, sadness, impatience, and the like. Galatians says those who belong to Christ Jesus have crucified the sinful nature with its passions and desires.
This presentation of the Meyer Minute on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Thrivent Financial, online at thrivent.com. We do more than work. We work with a purpose.
Well, every once in a while, we like to bring you some of the comments that you, our listeners, have left on our Issues, Etc. comment line. You may not know about this. We have a comment line that's 24 hours. You can leave your name. You don't have to leave your name. You can be anonymous. You can criticize. You can commend. You can comment. You can question anything on the Issues, Etc. listener comment line. And occasionally, we like to play it for our listeners. We will be here for the next half hour or so of the program. We're coming to you live this Monday, July the 30th. By the way, the number for that comment line is 314-505-7825, 314-505-7825. Before we get to those listener comments, we've been gone for a while. I guess it's hard to, it's all been a whirlwind for me. We spent the last two weekends away. We were in Houston, Texas for the convention of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, the 14th or somewhere in that neighborhood. I don't know what it was. We did a great Sunday night program with Dr. Paul Meyer on biblical archaeology. That seems like about 6 months ago to me, because very shortly after that, we picked up and we went to the Twin Cities for the first time. Our Issues, Etc. Reformation Tour went to the Twin Cities, had a great Sunday night program, and a Sunday morning, by the way, with Pastor Beasley and Johnson at, if I can remember, St. John's Lutheran Church in Meadowbrook?
Pastor Briel.
Briel.
Steve Briel. Yeah, Briel. St. John's Lutheran Church in Maple Grove.
Maple Grove, Meadowbrook, Maple Grove. It all runs together after a while. And then we had a good experience at the Higher Things Youth Conference in Minneapolis and St. Paul, although I was never really sure whether we were in Minneapolis or St. Paul. And we did some programs there. You might have heard them from the University Lutheran Chapel at the Higher Things Youth Conference at the University of Minnesota, I think was the state we were actually in at the time. I'm very glad to be home, although it was nice to go do the program, see everybody, Getting home was a bit of an ordeal. This is one of the travails of traveling, and that is having your flight that was supposed to take off at 9:30 canceled. Well, not canceled. First put off until 1:20 in the morning, then put off till 2:40 in the morning. And by that time, of course, I was already in a hotel in St. Paul because I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that they're going to cancel it. And then leaving the next morning only to have your flight that was supposed to be at 11:30 in the morning put off for about another 2 hours or so.
You know, I read in the news, it was Northwest was the airline.
Oh, yeah.
And apparently there's some kind of, like, strike going on with the pilots. And that was a part of our problem, too, is both mechanical and they're short. They got a pilot shortage.
Well, no.
Charlie, you're nodding your head. Did you read about that, too? No?
Had we known this, because I fly Northwest at least once a year, every year, never have any trouble, out of St. Louis into Denver and up to Casper, Wyoming, every January for the last 4 or 5 years, never had any trouble. The planes are always very small, but you're going to Casper, Wyoming, for heaven's sakes. And this was an experience.
The flight out there was good, though. Did you tell
them? Oh, yeah. Well, we got, I don't know how it happened, but we got bumped up to first class without having to pay. And I'll tell you what, I've never flown first class before. It's pretty sweet. It actually makes flying bearable. Moderately bearable.
It was nice. It's the first time I've ever flown first class, too. We didn't have any assigned seats.
Do you mean in all of your travels with real radio?
No.
When you were doing the sports syndication, when you were traveling with Bob Costas and Madden and all those big names in sports radio, they made you fly coach.
Never. I just dreamed about it.
Did Madden sit up front?
I was a low-life, you know, producer. You know, the talent. People like you got to sit up front. You know, I get in the back.
Well, you sat right next to me on the flight up there.
That was nice, though. I mean, they're constantly asking if you want things, and you can have as many as you want. You've got an assortment of candy and peanuts and
fruit?
What else?
Fruit?
Fruits and chips.
Full bags of chips.
And they just keep coming back. And they give you the whole soda.
It was amazing. And then, of course, the experience going back was kind of like every bit of pleasure is bought with a bit of pain.
What was the highlight of it, would you say, your personal highlight of the trip?
For the whole trip? Well, it's a toss-up between getting to spend 2 hours with Clem Preuss on the Sunday night program, where he just hit the ball out of the park. Absolutely great crowd there, people from all around the Minneapolis area. That, or perhaps preaching that morning, which I preach so seldom nowadays, as I used to preach a lot more, getting a chance to address the congregation there, Pastor Briel's congregation and Johnson's congregation at St. John's, those are the kind of competing for the highlight.
Yeah, the crowd was, I think it was the best crowd we've ever had. I mean, most boisterous.
Better than Dearborn?
Yeah, we're going to Dearborn, you know, in September, and they've got their work cut out. They better work on some of their applause and things, because that crowd was, there was just tons of energy in that room.
Better than San Francisco.
Ooh, San Francisco. But San Francisco, that was our biggest crowd ever, because the show's on, you know, 7 to 9 instead of 9 to 11 or 10 to midnight.
All right, what was your highlight?
I'd say definitely the show. Mm-hmm. The show Sunday night was great. Callers were great. Pastor Preuss did a tremendous job. And let's see, I'd say watching your presentation at Higher Things was one of my highlights. It was very, very good. Tell them a little bit about your presentation.
It's just stock, standard, boilerplate Wilkin stuff.
You had PowerPoint. Wilkin is not a PowerPoint guy. I mean, you use PowerPoint.
Well, I am now, I guess. It was a two-part thing for about, I think there were about 1,200 kids there. And they broke it into, we were doing back-to-back sessions. And the first part was anyone can die on the cross. Anyone can die on a cross, but only Jesus dies on the cross for you. That was the theme of their conference. And the second part was everybody loves Jesus, which you kind of have to see to understand the everybody loves Jesus thing.
And you did the presentation PowerPoint. You developed that all on your own. My wife did mine for me, the presentation I had to make on how to speak to an evangelical.
You know, I'll have to say I had never even touched PowerPoint before about 9:30 the night before. But I finally dove in and said, I have to spice this up. So I'm glad you enjoyed it. It was nice.
The
first hotel where there were dogs, what I believe were certainly most certainly prostitutes, and someone smoking crack on the third floor. We moved into a slightly better hotel the second night.
Yeah, the I knew we were in trouble. We have to. We always want wireless for so we can access the web for our laptops that we carry. And so I called the desk and said, I'm having a hard time getting connection on the wireless. Or if I do get on, it's really low and slow. She goes, what room are you in? I said, 262. She goes, oh, don't work too well on that side of the building. And I said, well, you told us that we had wireless capabilities. Well, you have to come down the lobby to do it.
Okay, you guys have to understand something about Jeff and wireless. Jeff is addicted to wireless communications. I suspected this before, but now I know it to be true. Because when we got to the hotel, and I saw the dogs and the prostitutes, and I was thinking of a way to try and explain to Jeff, or perhaps just cajole Jeff into letting us, because Jeff makes these decisions, out of this hotel and into a slightly better one. I called my wife on the phone, and I said, I'll tell you what, this will decide it. If Jeff can't get wireless in his room, we're leaving this hotel tomorrow night. And no sooner had I said it than there was a knock at the door. I said, honey, hang on for a moment. Put the phone down. And there at the door of my hotel room was Jeff holding his laptop in his hand saying, can you get wireless? I can't get wireless. We're leaving here. I'm going to go online and find a different hotel. The crack didn't bother him, the prostitutes, the dogs running up and down the hallway. He could live with all of this, but not without his wireless.
The my lowlights.
Okay.
10 minutes before the national radio show, I disconnect. I kick out the phone connection. Everybody's got a little phone jack at home. You know the wire, those little plastic ends. It was busted off, so I knocked it out. I mean, here we are supposed to go nationally, and I look and we don't have a signal back to KFUO. Well,
you need to understand that the show originates from these remote locations, but it gets back here to our studios in St. Louis via a regular old phone line and some very sophisticated equipment. And from there, nationally, it's sent down to Irving, Texas, and up to a satellite and then across the nation. But the problem is, if you kick out the phone jack at the remote location, we can do all the show we want to. It never even makes it to St. Louis, much less Irving, Texas, much less the nation. So it was it's not the first time you've kicked something out and going
into
the program.
Of course, I started on the wrong end to find where the connection was a problem. I started, at the phone and worked my way back, and it was right underneath my feet. But yeah. The second low light was the fact that we had two people write checks donating. You handed them to me, and I've lost the checks.
Well, I should say this. By the way, if anyone walked up to me and handed me a generous donation for issues, et cetera, Sunday night last Sunday, not this last Sunday, but Sunday before last, at St. John's there in Minneapolis. We'll probably need to talk with you. I don't know if they're listening, but we'll probably need to talk with you. Don't worry, they won't get cashed by anybody else. But
yeah, and the problem is we don't know who they are. We know what they look like. So now, and we know where they go to church. So we're going to call their pastors, describe them, so we can apologize because I've looked everywhere. I know you handed them to me. I don't know. I know where I put them, but. Not, a lot of times elapse and
yeah.
I can't find
I got one other story to tell, and then we'll do listener comment line. You weren't with me because you apparently have a very lackadaisical attitude about making it to the airport, although I can be accused of the same thing. When we went to Houston, I walked onto the airport literally 1 second before they closed the door. I think they'd already closed the door, and they reopened it for me. But whatever day it was we were leaving Minneapolis to go home, I had a shuttle ride from St. Paul over to the airport, which was an interesting venture. You actually left after me, but got there before me because the guy driving my shuttle was a friendly enough guy. I was in the shuttle with 8 women. All of them were irate because their flights had been canceled too. I have never heard, you might want to cover your kids' ears. I have never heard the F word more often from women than I had. These are old ladies, 70, 60 years old. Not that that's that old, but grandmas. And I've never heard cussing like I've heard from this woman. And then our shuttle got lost on the way to the airport. He didn't get lost on the way to the airport. He just couldn't find the other hotel. And then he was cussing, and the ladies were cussing, and the radio was blaring loudly, and all I wanted to do was get to the airport. I wouldn't call that a low light. It was just a bit of an adventure. I got to see St. Paul. I mean, I got to see what my dad used to call the colorful parts of St. Paul during my little shuttle
ride. Quickly,
run.
What'd you think of the Twin Cities?
Well, Minneapolis appears to be under construction. I'll put it that way. The biggest pothole we've ever driven. We drove over a pothole that was the biggest pothole I've ever encountered in my life. And that was kind of my impression of Minneapolis. It's kind of under construction constantly. The people there were great, though. Marvelous people, no doubt about it. Our listener comment line is 314-505-7825. We're going to listen to some of our listeners' comments from the last couple of weeks of the program. We get comments from all over the place. You can leave your name. You don't have to leave your name. It can be anonymous. It can be positive and negative. We got a fair mix of both here as we listen to our issues, et cetera, listener comment line. You can react as well. Our call-in numbers today, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. You can also email us issues, etc@kfuo.org, as we come to you live this Monday, July the 30th. This first listener is in California. It's Cody. You want to talk a bit about purpose.
Hi, this is Cody from Malibu, and listening to your show on 98.3, I just wanted to thank you for bringing this idea to light. I've actually read two of Michael Horton's books, and laughably, I can't remember the name of either of them, but I totally concur, and I really think it's exciting. This is a rare territory to have, especially here in the mainstream or Christian media, the idea that there might be too much emphasis placed in the U.S. church on the here and now, and in simple terms, how Jesus can enhance your quality of life versus focusing on or realizing the emphasis, I think, that's supposed to be rightly placed on the eternal, on heaven, and on the afterlife. My struggle, if you don't mind me kind of voicing a question, and I don't know if you can get to this on the air, is presuming that everything is true that I've just discussed and that I've responded to, you know, the show, and that is perhaps that we need to be much more focused on the eternal. I'm having trouble, as a personal comment, deriving purpose in life, because at the risk of sounding pejorative, once you have your fire insurance, meaning once you've accepted the Lord, and I don't want to get into Calvinism versus the other different beliefs, Arminian or the other perspectives on salvation, but the idea is once you're a believer, for me at least, given that life as we know it was preceded and will be followed by eternity, and we are supposed to be focusing on the eternal things, I have a difficult time deriving purpose, meaning, significance, or granting significance to our lives as we know them, at least for me. No, I don't have the normal responsibilities, such as children or a spouse, and certainly have trials, but I'm not shirking responsibilities. I'm not suicidal either. But with all that said, I wrestle with, and I wonder how other people deal with this question, which is if life is preceded and followed by eternity, and even R.C. Sproul even argues this a little bit, for me, though, and if we're supposed to focus on eternal things, how is it that we derive any purpose? How do we not make a mockery of or laugh at our current state, given it's hopelessly temporary? We're from the dust, going to the dust, and that kind of thing. And so for me, I get very fatalistic and even deist in my thinking. And my prayers aren't typically answered, but I don't have a lot of bitterness or hopefully any bitterness. But I do feel like we're kind of free-floating sometimes. And so I guess those are my questions. I would love it if you could address this. If you have time, if this happens to be relevant. Take care. Thank you.
All right, that's Cody. Actually, it's a very good question. And if you were listening, he's kind of struggling with this. If I am saved, which is true, and the emphasis of Christianity truly is not upon me, myself, my own little pet purpose for life, but in fact on things eternal. How often does the New Testament say, set your minds on things above, or set your heart on things eternal, not things that are passing away? If this life truly is transient, passing away like a vapor, then what's the use of it? Is it a colossal waste of time, albeit a small amount of time in comparison to eternity? Is it just a waste of time here for the Christian? The answer is decidedly no. There are better alternatives. There is, in fact, a biblical alternative to this whole notion of once a Christian saved, now he's got to find his purpose, and the real meat of the Christian life is found in you finding your purpose. That's nonsense. The Christian life isn't about finding purpose. It's about Christ finding us sinners, forgiving our sins, and keeping us not only in this life, but for the life to come. But this life isn't a waste of time. This life now is devoted entirely to the neighbor, not to ourselves. Now, Cody says, you know, I'm not married, I don't have kids, but God has put you at various stations in life. And unless you live entirely as a hermit, far away from everyone else, he's put neighbors all around you. Now, if you will, there's your purpose. But you see, you don't look into yourself to find your purpose. If you look there, you will find meaninglessness. This life is now devoted to the neighbor. Why? Well, because Christ devoted his life to us. He substituted his life for ours. So now our life is not ours to spend as we will, or even ours to spend on ourselves, or, as Rick Warren would say, ours to spend somehow earning heavenly rewards for the life to come. No. This life, our life now, is our neighbor's, to spend as our neighbor's need dictates. Now, you looking for purpose? You've got more purpose than you'll ever need in your neighbor. The problem with Warren's solution, his whole purpose question, is that he locates our purpose in us, and then it's all for God. God doesn't need us to live out our purpose. Our neighbor does. Our neighbor isn't a means to an end, which is what the purpose-driven life will finally get you. A neighbor who is just a means to an end. He's a means to you earning heavenly rewards. No. Scripture says our neighbor is where we live our lives as Christians, in service of him, giving our lives totally to. This is what it means. Present yourselves as living sacrifices. To whom? To God? Well, that would be blasphemy, wouldn't it? Does God need any more sacrifice, especially from us, after having received the sacrifice of his perfect, holy, sinless Son? No. Present ourselves as living sacrifices to our neighbors. That's real purpose. Next caller from Texas offers his thoughts on gays in the military.
Hey, Todd. This is Nate calling from Austin. I was listening to your show where you were discussing gays in the military, and most of my objections are non-moral, too, because most of mine are based on the idea that it would affect unit cohesion if, for the same reason that I'm not in favor of women being in the combat zone, in the fact that when two people within a unit are dating, it does disrupt unit cohesion. Because either one, while they're dating, someone's jealous because it's like friggin' high school, or when they break up, it causes, again, it disrupts it because people within the unit take sides. The other element to it is that, I mean, all the other arguments that people have where it's based upon the fact that members within the military wouldn't be able to handle it and they'd be biased, or arguments based upon this would be nullified if and when you reach a point where, as society is moving to more and more of an open acceptance of homosexuality, that argument will eventually fade away. Whereas an argument where it would affect unit cohesion based upon two people in a relationship always affects unit cohesion within a military unit. Even if they're not in the same unit, it can affect unit cohesion. The other thing on that show, you discussed churches advertising, and the Catholic priest or archbishop who made the comment that evangelism is selling. Well, and if evangelism is like selling, if you believe that it is a choice of the consumer to choose to follow Christ, evangelism isn't advertisement. If you believe that it's the product that creates within the consumer the ability to choose the product. And lastly, Todd, you really have to try the Hefeweizen from Sam Adams. Personally, I think it's a little bit better than the Boston Lager. Talk to you later. Bye.
Well, there's no accounting for taste. I must have mentioned on the air at some point that I was fond of Sam Adams' Boston Lager. It is, in my opinion, and I don't even really like beer that much anymore. It is, in my opinion, the greatest beer ever brewed, and no one will convince me otherwise. I kind of had my stint with the wheat beers. I'll give it a shot, but there's no accounting for taste. The idea about advertising, well, of course, one can only think about the church's mission in the world as advertising if one has decided that somehow the gospel is a product that we must sell to consumers rather than Christ whom we preach to sinners. Two completely different things. And thanks for your thoughts on gays in the military as well. All right, do we have time for this next one? This one is an anonymous caller. We don't know even where from, but do we have time? No time for it yet. We'll get to it in a moment here. We're listening to some Issues Etc. listener comments from our Issues Etc. listener comment line. If you'd like to react, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We don't have time for the whole comment, so we'll save it for the other side of the break. You can also email us this Monday, July the 30th, issuesetc@kfuo.org. We are back live. After a few more minutes of Issues Etc. listener comments, we're going to have some audio open lines. PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly has an interesting feature on religion and The Simpsons, especially with the release of The Simpsons movie. There's a Fox News segment on virtual child porn. Some are arguing that it shouldn't be illegal because it doesn't employ real children. And then there's a Fox News report on an attempted exorcism. A grandfather and his 3-year-old grandchild, and the grandfather just nearly killed the kid trying to cast out demons. We'll hear about that during audio open lines. We'll be talking with Pastor Paul Beisel about confession and absolution. He's pastor of Concordia Lutheran Church in Warsaw, Illinois, and he made a presentation at last week's Higher Things Youth Conference titled PC&A, Private Confession and Absolution. More Issues Etc. listener comment line on the other side of this break, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. You can comment, too. We'll be right back with more Issues Etc. listener comments.
Radio for the Thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.